Hello, my name is Ricky Jones, and on behalf of the session, I want to welcome you to Redeemer Presbyterian Church and really thank you for coming out and making our worship service part of your Christmas Eve tradition. And I hope that you'll be glad that you came. I hope you'll stay and get a cookie and a cup of punch with us, and I hope this will kick off a Merry Christmas for you, because I've gotten very important news for you. And that important news is this: God has done something unbelievable at Christmas. He has done something that is truly, in every sense of the word, unbelievable. I mean, let's just think about it for a second. Typically, we tend to have what's called historical or chronological snobbery when we look at stories like Mary and Joseph. And what that means is this: we hear a story about Joseph finding out that his wife was pregnant, his fiance was pregnant before he had ever been alone with her. And we think, well, those simpletons back then, they had angels appearing to them all the time, and they thought that was the kind of thing that happened, but we know better now. And I want you to know, for with no uncertain terms, that people have always known how babies were made. And if you think you had cold feet in the days leading up to your wedding, imagine hearing that your fiance is expecting, and Joseph is doing the normal thing, and an angel, a messenger from heaven, appears to him, and no, it had never happened to him before either. And said, "Don't be afraid. This is from the Lord." And Joseph believed the angel and took Mary. And this child that they had, this child was born of a virgin. And he was born in a manger. It was in a cave, as Brian said. And that child was God himself on earth. And he lived a perfect life. And he lived a life of poverty. He lived a life of scandal and people chasing after him. And yet he never sinned. And he died a death for us, to save us from this world in which we live. And that is what we're here to celebrate. And it is unbelievable. And I want you to know that. I want you to acknowledge it. As a matter of fact, what I'd really love is for several of you to realize, you know what? That is unbelievable, and I don't believe it. Because you don't. You see, when you hear a story like this, you really only got two legitimate options. One option is to go, angels don't appear, virgins don't get pregnant, God's not a man, that didn't happen. That is a legitimate, honest option. The other option is to go, God appeared on earth. God, the creator of the universe, has come to earth and he has lived with us. And if that's true, then nothing else really matters. And I'm going to focus my entire life around that fact. And that is a legitimate option. But what is not a legitimate option is to just kind of go, yeah, I sort of believe it. Yeah, I believe it, but it's not that big of a deal. What that becomes is nothing more than folklore. We believe it because it's a cool tradition. Kind of like, you know, we heard the story that George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. We know George Washington didn't really chop down a cherry tree, but he was an honest kind of guy. And that's what's important. He was honest. And of course, Jesus wasn't really born of a virgin, because babies, virgins don't have babies, but he was special, and that's what's important, that we're celebrating his birthday, because he was special. But you need more than special. You need unbelievable. And I'm going to encourage you to look beyond just the folklore tradition. I'm going to encourage you, first of all, really to examine your own heart and say, do I believe in Jesus for basically the same reason that I believe that Oklahoma Sooner football is the best football in the world. Do I believe it just because I'm from Oklahoma? And if I were from Ohio, I would think Ohio State football is the best in the world. And if I were from Alabama, I would believe that Alabama football is the best in the world. And I'm from America, so I celebrate Christmas. But if I were from India, I wouldn't. And there's nothing more real to it than the fact that I'm just doing it because I've always grown up to do it. I want you to examine that and ask yourself if you really believe something unbelievable. Because you need something unbelievable. You need something unbelievable because you know what is believable? You know what's believable? Death is believable. Things falling apart is believable. Couples having fights and both of them refusing to forgive the other and both of them refusing to really give in and make a sacrifice for the other. And so they just build up bitterness after bitterness after bitterness until they hate each other and they divorce. That's believable. I talked to my mom this last week and she's falling down and she's way too young to be falling down. And she had the conversation with the doctor that nobody wants to have because the doctor said, I don't know why you're falling down. It doesn't make sense. And it might be a big deal and it might not. And I'm praying for this week and I thought, okay, what am I really hoping for here? Well, I'm hoping that she lives a long time. She's going to die eventually. I want the years that she has left to be good ones and healthy ones and happy ones. I don't want her to hold on and be sick and lose her memory and lose her body. Because losing your body and losing your memory and then dying in obscurity and your life having no meaning, that is utterly believable. And you need more than a nice. And you need more than special. Because I'm telling you, I know, like you know, that virgins don't have babies. But if that virgin didn't have a baby, if nothing came out of that virgin's womb, then nothing came out of that man's grave. And if nothing came out of Jesus' grave, nothing's going to come out of your grave. And there is no hope beyond what you see. And I don't know what you've seen this week. But I need unbelievable. I need unbelievable, and you need unbelievable, and you know it. You know, we live in what some theologians are calling a post-Christian culture, which that's a great term. I like that term. Let's just play with it. But you know what's fascinating about a post-Christian culture is that all of our stories haven't changed, and all of our needs haven't changed. And so we're not talking so much about religion, but all the needs are the same. What's the post-Christian wanting and talking about? There's an overwhelming growth in the popularity of comic books. Why? Or the stories, at least. Why? Because we need something supernatural, something superhuman to come and save us. There's this knowledge. We're not big enough to do it ourselves. And there's this growth. It's funny. The number of students at MIT, I heard this statistic a few years ago, so I don't have the numbers, but the number of students in MIT who believe in Jesus, that Jesus is God, is far lower than the number who believe in extraterrestrials. Isn't that interesting? And it's very common among the scientific community, actually. I tried to get his name today, and I couldn't, but Dr. Watson, one of the two doctors, the scientist who discovered the double helix formation of DNA, kind of a big deal. He's kind of a scholar. He believes that life came to this planet from another planet. I mean, extraterrestrial life is his absolute necessity, and he's dedicated his life to searching for it. Why? We need answers from out there. There's this knowledge in us that we need something unbelievable. We need to be saved from out there. We need something great out there. We need answers from out there. And the message of Christmas is that it's come. The visitor has come. We really have been visited by somebody from another world. His name was Gabriel. And he came to a young girl and to a young man. And he said, it's okay. Go ahead and get married. Because your child is something unbelievable. He's going to be God himself. We've been visited by somebody from another world. And his name was Jesus. And it's unbelievable. And he has brought for us opportunities for unbelievable peace. Unbelievable peace. He has brought peace between us and our makers. And he's done that in two ways. One is, he's done that by allowing us to get our licks in on God. Because honestly, if you've ever really thought about life, if you've ever really suffered, you've gotten mad at God, and there's been a part of you that's wanted to go, God, it's not fair. You want to cry out with Job and go, well, I'm down here, and you're up there, and I can't reach you. And why is it that you make us suffer, and you stay up there in your castle? Why don't you ever come down here and walk in my shoes? And he did. He was born. He was rejected from birth. He was hunted by Herod's soldiers. He was hungry. He was hated for being a Jew. The Romans looked down on him. The other Jews looked down on him for being from Nazareth, for being from a poor family, for being from uncertain birth. See, they didn't believe in virgin births either. He was betrayed. He was killed. God himself has suffered. He came down to settle the score for us and to let us get our kicks in. He has not demanded anything from us that he's not given himself. He has suffered injustice. He suffered pain. He's come to make peace between him and us. He's also suffered for us. You see, God was up there having the same conversation. How dare you rebel? How dare you hate me and turn against me after all the grace I've given you and life that I've given you? You need to suffer. And so God, Jesus came in as a man to suffer as a man. To level the scale. And that's unbelievable. And we are now at peace with our Creator if we'll receive it. And that is unbelievable. And that peace, if you'll receive it, soaks through every part of your life. And it allows you to be at peace with others. It allows you to be at peace with your family. It allows you to be at peace with those who hate you. He has come to bring joy. He's come to bring joy because we don't have to hoard every moment afraid that if this gift breaks, then life is over. You know? He's come to bring joy that we can enjoy these moments and know that he's coming back. And we can enjoy what we have as a gift from our Father. We are not alone. We are not alone. And he has come to bring hope. We've got better than this. Death will not be the end. That's why we still sing songs of expectation on Christmas Eve. Because we are longing for Jesus to come so we can see him, so we can be freed completely and utterly in our experience from sickness, from death, from hatred, from disappointment, from broken hearts. He has come to bring peace, and he's brought joy, and he's brought hope. And my only job today is to declare that to you. And in a lot of ways, my job is to do for you what Gabriel did for Mary and Joseph. I am declaring something to you that is unbelievable. And they received it. Mary said, okay. Joseph said, I'll take your word for it. And that's what's up to you. Will you receive it? Will you allow this to become the most important set of truths in your life? Will you order your life around it? Will you receive it? A Christmas gift has to be received. In order to be received, it has to be needed, right? If someone gives you a bottle of wine for Christmas and you're a recovering alcoholic, you don't think you need it? And you will not receive it, right? I hope. Well, do you need a Savior? Will you receive it? Will you rejoice in it? He has come. He really has. And He is not a tradition. And He's not a legend. He is not a holiday that we celebrate. He is a person. A concrete person that you have to receive. There's some funny things about people, you know. A tradition you can decide to practice this year or not. In our family, we try very hard to not ever do the same thing twice on holidays. We don't want any traditions. Because all traditions do is like next year someone's getting mad that we didn't do. You know, we didn't watch the same movie that we watched last year. We didn't eat at the same restaurant. So we try to do something completely different every year with this one exception, this worship service. It's our only tradition. Tradition, it really is, trust me, it is up to you to decide whether to do that this year or not. A philosophy, it's your decision whether you want to believe it or not. But a person demands a decision, doesn't he? It's been a long time, but I remember what it felt like to ask girls out on dates and have that question. And she might try to put you off, but it was still a no. A not now was still a no. People demand decisions. I tell this illustration every Christmas, but when I went to college, there was a... I went to college in 1987. If you'll remember the 80s, the overwhelming kind of sentiment at some points was AIDS and fear of it because we didn't know how you caught it. We weren't sure yet. And so there was fear of toilet seats. There was fear of mosquitoes. I don't know if y'all remember that. There was this real problem with these babies being born who had AIDS, and nobody wanted to touch them. And what we all know, what psychologists have shown us conclusively, is that babies have to be touched. They have to be physically handled, or they'll be scarred for a long time. And no one in this hospital in Philadelphia would touch these babies without gloves, without something protecting them. And there was a priest who made it his ministry to hold babies all day long. Because he didn't see a moral dilemma. He didn't see an interesting philosophical question. He saw a baby. What Gabriel presented to Mary and to Joseph was a baby. And what I'm presenting to you is a baby. An unbelievable baby. Will you receive it? Please pray with me.